Blog Talk Radio.
Benvenuti tutti, and welcome to another episode of Like Thelma and Louise, where Thelma and Louise get together and talk about different issues current going on in their lives and about relationships. So, welcome, Thelma. Are you out there?
Hi, Louise. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. So I just wanted to refresh your memory, my memory, and our listeners' memory around what we discussed in the last episode where we talked about radical acceptance and ambiguity. And the conversation kind of evolved from there into a discussion about bad behavior, condoning bad behavior, looking at the contradictions within ourselves, balancing that when we engage in behavior that we judge ourselves for, and sometimes it is bad behavior, and how to deal with that contradiction in ourselves and with others. And so it reminds me, a couple of weeks ago, I volunteered to be like a camp counselor at a day camp tailored just for girls. It was a blast, but of course, you know, you're dealing with ages 8 up to 14, actually 17, so there's some adolescents in the mix. And it was really interesting for myself to observe my trigger points with actually just one adolescent in particular. And so having to deal with that contradiction of, you know, accepting and being open and going with the flow versus we've got some stuff we need to get accomplished here, and you're interrupting that flow. So it was really interesting to observe that for myself. I mean, I know that you are around adolescents or have had adolescents in your life in the past.
Yeah, I've been immersed with adolescents, my own and friends, children, and others. But, you know, ironically, as you're talking about this, Louise, I'm reminded of a couple of incidents that have happened recently, but even the biggest one, and I mean, I'll share with you a minute of one of my, well, let's start with that. But I do want to talk about the national scene as well, the whole Scaramucci thing. Talk about bad behavior.
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen?
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, yeah. Is that unbelievable? I mean, I feel like the pendulum is at the height of the swing on bad behavior with his recent New Yorker interview. I just have to say that because it's right when you were saying that, I was sitting here going, oh my God. And so what really resonates for me is so in your situation at the camp, you have little authority over this young person, right?
I have a friend who
is in this, yeah, with this situation with a teenage, a 17-year-old boy, no authority. No, but you know, at the end of the day, what kind of authority do we have over anybody's bad behavior, whether it's our children, whether it's an employee, whether it's our neighbor? At the end of the day,
oh,
and this goes back to
yes.
your earlier point on internal and external contradiction, right?
Yes.
What is our role? What is our role? What do you think?
Oh my gosh! You know, that's the question right there. And I tell you, I struggled with that. That whole week of camp. And, I mean, I lost sleep over it. It's like, what is my role here? Where do I – because I kept going back and forth between condoning the bad behavior, which some of it I thought was disruptive, and against the policies and the procedures that this camp had outlined with how you were to interact when you were with your campers. And then it's like, what's my role in speaking up? And here's the other little tricky thing about this. This particular adolescent was the child of one of the people in charge of the camp. And thank goodness I discovered that this adolescent was the child of one of the people in charge, because I was getting ready to go and complain to this person about this adolescent, not knowing that it was her child. So,
well, it makes you think that that child played that a little bit maybe too, you know?
Oh, absolutely. That was the other thing that was so interesting to see this child kind of play that card with me and others, and then to watch the interaction with the child and the mother. The mother did not condone that behavior. That mother was, in fact, I think that mom would probably be pretty upset if the mom mm-hmm. knew how the adolescent was behaving in the group setting.
Yeah, that's interesting, because back to the point, so let's just go back to Scaramucci for a minute. The person who is, quote, in authority over that bad behavior right now will do nothing about what happened there. You know, I don't know how
right.
old he is, 50, late 40s, early 50s. You know, I mean, that's obviously an extreme example. But so get this one. This is perfect timing for this. So my husband travels a lot, and he was on a plane yesterday on the way back from somewhere. And I want to say what the airline was, because the flight attendant turned it out. The whole team ended up just being phenomenal. But I won't, just for the sake of confidentiality. But fast forward, my husband was in the exit row, and there were two women he was on one side, and there were two young women on the other side. Well, these two young women were disruptive from the time they were sitting in the waiting area. When they entered the plane, sat waiting. And you could tell that my husband said they'd really, the flight attendant was really tweaked, and they were being very obnoxious. So when she asked them, she went through everything about what you're required to do in the exit row. They wouldn't answer her. And she said, I need for you to verbally respond to me. Well, they're muttering under their breath. They're cussing. They're, you know, waving themselves around. She promptly turned around, walked up to the bulkhead, brought back told another flight attendant, who was a large male. He came back and he said, you come with me right now and don't make me ask you twice. Young woman stands up, cusses and raves the entire way up the aisle in front of everybody, goes up, and they had her speak to the captain of the plane. Captain stood up, looked her in the face, and put his finger in the face. Nobody knows what she said. She shut up, turned around, went back and sat down in her seat, and didn't hear anything from those two young women for the rest of the time. I applaud. You know, that's one of the things with this, with all of these scenarios. I said, let's make America have manners again. Where is the etiquette, and where do we have, can people be polite? I mean, we're talking about human lives here. That is a responsibility you take on, God forbid, if something happens in a plane when you are sitting in the exit row. It's not funny. It's not a joke.
Exactly.
It's not something for you to sit there and cuss and act like immature. And these were not adolescent women either. So just for you to bring this up today. Now, in that case, there was something these people could, you know, the flight folks could do. They were going to kick these. They were fully prepared to ask these women to exit the plane.
Yeah, and I think the rest of the plane probably would applaud it as well, because that, back to your point about the role and the significance, it's like those are the people who our lives depend on, because they're the ones that are supposed to stay on the plane helping everybody else get off.
Right.
It's crazy.
I know. I mean, there's just, you know, it's just, there's so many examples. Everywhere we turn, there's an example. And this is not just judgment on our points. This is blatant bad behavior. There are things that people do, I think, that are intentional or even unintentional, that can come across. One of my favorite, there's a model with a tool that I work with. And if you think of a circle on the left with intent and a circle on the right with impact, and in the middle, there's the gap. And this was a Berkeley professor, and I'm sorry, Edith NG. I'm sorry, I don't know how to say the last name. I want to give her credit. But the bottom line is the intent in what we say and how we say it. We do our best. We hope that it's the impact and how it's going to land on the other side is what we intend. But most of the time, that's not true, just from our human experience. So when you think about what we're talking about, some of it is related to the gap in between our intent and the impact. Does that make sense?
It totally does. And, you know, I'm loving the flavor of this conversation, because that in-between gap are where all our filters are. Our filters that we show up with in this life, whether, you know, we base it on astrology, whether we base it on childhood experiences, whether we, you know, talk about whatever we sort of attribute that philosophy to, that there's, like, the message gets scrambled from the person with their intent of the impact, and then the actual impact on the individual or the group of individuals, whatever that may be, Oh, I love this.
And right. What is so back to the young women example. If you don't have enough awareness to have any indication of what your impact can be, they were just showing off probably. This is probably how these two women act in life. But they had no idea. They weren't thinking about all the people around them. There were families. There are business people who travel all the time. They've been gone for days. They just want to get home. They're in their own world. And a lot of times when you look at these behaviors that people are doing, they have no idea about the impact they have on others.
Well, and some of it is they're looking to have that video footage that they can post on Facebook to all their friends about being dragged off the plane and make national television. None of that helps this scenario. And I think back to your point of them not understanding their impact and even taking into consideration other people's intentions and perspectives and wants and needs and putting theirs for their 15 seconds of fame are at the ultimate top. And I love how you just said, you know, you want America to have manners again. I mean, that's what it boils down to. Things have just gotten so that people want that recognition and notice. It doesn't matter how it happens. They just want it to happen.
Mm-hmm. And our society is so driven, and I'm generalizing because this is not all people, but by the drama of it all. I mean, just to go back to the presidency, Newt Gingrich was on over the past couple of days, and he was talking about Trump actually doing a lot of good things, but nobody knows this because of all the drama, all of the small potato things that are put out in the general public. And that's not just true for Trump. That happens, to your point, with individuals. There are individuals everywhere who are doing great things every day. They're kind. They're generous. They're making impacts in their, you know, in their communities and their families in all these different ways. And what do? We elevate the crazy.
Yeah. Because it is abnormal on some level, but then it's almost becoming normalized because of the focus and attention that it gets. People start assuming that this is going on far more frequently than it really is. It comes back to that whole idea that you get what you focus on, and if we're focusing on the abnormal bad behavior, we're going to get more of it. Instead of, back to your point of, there are a lot of decent people doing decent things every day, getting no recognition, no acknowledgement. And so, you know, it again comes back to fear that we have and learning how to have that be enough without the external validation or pat on the back for what we do to be a decent human being.
Yeah. And you know, it's interesting as you say that. To that, I have a tendency, and it's partly, I think, it's just this is from my experience. When you have, for lack of a better word, I just want to say, well, let's just call it moral compass, something inside you that keeps you grounded or drives you, or, you know, whatever it is. And that's different for different people, universe, God, spirit, whatever it is, right? The earth, nature, whatever it is. And this brings me back to what you're saying about adolescence, but it's not just adolescence. It's every single age and back to that normalizing. And there's tons of research out there on this. So young kids look around and they think that whoever there see that everybody's smoking, everybody's drinking, everybody's smoking pot, everybody's having sex. It's the everybody normalizing thing, right? Everybody's tweeting, everybody's on Facebook, everybody's having, it's all those things. And I think some of it is that technology, I think, is promoting that. But then the irony is research actually shows, for example, sex. Data just out recently, America's not having as much sex as people think that they are, you know?
Yeah.
Yet back to that internal thing, they'll look around, everybody else but me is doing it. Everybody but me has money. Everybody but me, you know, and that's in part, I think, because we get these snapshots on Facebook and Snapchat and all those things. Not that they aren't entertaining or interesting. They have their value. But I know I can speak about my college-age daughter, spring break, perfect example. People send their, you know, few second segments on the fun part of spring break out of an entire 7-day experience.
Exactly.
And that's what people think that the entire you know, 7 times 24 hours or whatever it is about. But I'm not there. I'm not doing that. I'm stuck here. You know, the whole normalizing, I think, to your point on behavior is significant.
Oh, this is so much fun. Because one of the things, you know, as you're talking about the internal compass and the 3-second Snapchat video that looks like someone's life is perfect and mine sucks, essentially, it's a lot of the work that I do with individuals and people getting astrology readings and people wanting coaching. They're like, everybody else has that other thing and I don't have it. And what am I doing wrong? And what am I missing? And I'm just want to say, stop comparing. You know, we don't know. And I don't know what kind of impact did you think you were going to have? And in some level, I had the same conversation with myself about, you know, what kind of impact did I think I was going to have at camp? What kind of impact do I think I'm going to have on the world and society? And it doesn't always measure up to that idea I have in my head. And how do I reconcile that and accept it looks the way it looks? And trust that I'm still having an impact because, like you said, I'm a decent human being, living life and being a decent person for the most part on a daily basis. And trust mm-hmm. that energy that's being put out there is enough. And they don't have to be Gandhi and they don't have to be Mandela and they don't have to be in prison for years and get people to pay attention to my message.
Oh, isn't that the truth? Yeah, yes. You know, you think back even 100 years, not even 100 years, you know, just, oh my gosh, I was sharing with somebody the other day, it was only, 25, 27 years ago, I remember when I had a job that I started in and I was on a card table in my boss's office. And there were 6 or so of us in a group, and we shared one computer in the hallway for every department. And we didn't have email, and we were excited when you got online directories. We still went to the library, and I remember the day we got the fax machine, and I knew everything was going to change, and I remember when we got email. It was both exciting and overwhelming. And, you know, you look back at these years, and it's just like, as I hear you say that, it's all these additional layers of pressure to be these things that we see everybody else is doing. And I know you and I are both consumed by self-help, right? The path of enlightenment, whatever the heck that means. But that's also, I mean, that's the power of marketing, you know, in many ways, but that's the message that people want to get out and want us to believe and hear, right?
And the other part is the luxury of that.
Absolutely.
In our Western culture, because we have disposable income and disposable time, it is a freaking luxury. And then we turn it into some anxiety, sort of pathological problem.
Yes, the worried well, as we call
yes.
many people, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Right. But fairly, it's real. And I mean, we can't compare pain. We can't compare people's anguish. It's reasonable.
That's my favorite.
You know, and that goes back to
me.
What? Oh,
can't
we can't compare pain.
That was like such a moment for me. It was a game changer, just so you know.
Wow. Well, I try to remember that because it's easy when you know, for example, in my job, you know, there are deep pockets of poverty and terrible things that happen in the world. And on the other end of the people that I get to work with, they're very wealthy people. But it's not about the money at the end of the day. It's really not. You know, I mean, I would say a lot of times health, you know, it goes back to what are those personal values? What is that lens of judgment when we go back to that, the ambiguity of it all. And, you know, I guess I'd circle back to what you said again on just how do we learn to, it's the detachment, you know, trying to assume the best, that everybody's doing the best they can even, and I'm an honest, I'm not going to lie, I sat there reading that interview last night with Scaramucci going, oh, unbelievable. And then I had to just sit back and look at him as a human being. Here's a guy who's been, he wanted this position. He's now been thrown into it. He does not have a communications background. And I'm sure he's in shock and awe. It's hard not to be judgmental, but when I can really go to my deeper self, I can sit back and say, wow, this guy's probably pretty freaked out. Excited on one hand, freaked out on the other, doesn't know which way to go. There's so much going on, you know? So, I mean, that's just one example.
Yeah.
But.
I think about that in and again, go back and forth, like you say, from that judgment, it's like, how could you not know the role of this position and the authority and the influence? And another part of me is like, this isn't a game, people. This is the decisions ripple across the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And then the shared history that the that he shares with the president, with Trump, and kind of what their own culture is around acceptable behavior and that bombastic, in your face, anything goes behavior. Like there isn't any internal control mechanism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, I look at that whole scene and I think, oh, go ahead, sorry.
No, go ahead.
It's the whole energy attraction too. Because it just keeps picking up steam, which is no surprise because like does attract like, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes.
But
yes, it
you
does.
Know, the whole pendulum has to shift.
Yeah, and, you know, just thinking back in of, you know, the whole internal contradiction and how do we negotiate and navigate that, I guess part of that whole point that you just made around like attracts like, how do we find our birds that are going to elevate our flight? You know, that whole birds of a feather flock together. It's like, how do you find the birds that are going to help you step up your game, support you in stepping up your game? And
I love that,
yeah.
Lise. I love that imagery. I mean, that's really beautiful. And that, to me, that goes back to having a self-awareness, you know, and I'll even stop myself. I mean, there are articles that I just won't even open anymore. I don't want to read it. I mean, I had to read that one last night. I just was compelled. But you're right. There are a lot of those things that I don't want in my energy field. I don't want that in my attraction, you know, but I think it's about that awareness because I know other people in my life who are deep in a rabbit hole. It doesn't matter what the issue is either. It's not just national politics. It could be a relationship. It's a family member. It doesn't a job. It doesn't matter what it is. It's around our attachments really. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just, you know, and that's some of the, you know, that's some of the work too that with people, and it's like, you need some clarity. They're like, oh, I don't have any friends. No, I don't have this. Oh, I don't have that. Or whatever it is, you know, I don't have it. And everybody else does. It's like, wait a second. Let's get some clarity. First off, what is it that you want? Because you can't align your behavior to get what it is if you don't know what it is. And you're going to have to be okay with maybe it doesn't look like a gazillion friends because energetically there that you can hang with that are going to elevate your game. And where do you want your game to go?
Mm-hmm. I think it always keeps coming back to know thyself, to just keep learning and understanding yourself through all the different. I mean, we really, life is a self-study experience. What's it called when you have a, when you're in college and you get to take an independent study? We're all on a lifelong independent study. We build the curriculum. We look for our guidance. We determine our thesis statement, you know, I mean, all the time there's something new.
I love that, an independent study. Can I use that? Because, I totally love that, about the building the curriculum and, you know, having, like, your course goals and objectives. I think that's even more fun than a vision and mission statement for your life. I like the course goals.
Yeah.
And
well,
I mean,
that's really what it is, right?
It's so fun. Oh, I totally love that. I love you, and also thinking about the natal chart as sort of your framework to develop your course goals.
Oh, yeah, I like that.
Fun.
I really like
so
that.
Fun.
Yeah.
So, you know, I keep thinking back about our ultimate goal and objective with having our episodes is around some strategies. So, what are some of the concrete things that you do? You talk about, you know, that you have your own independent study and that you think that's part of it. Like, when you're faced with balancing the contradictions, either within yourself or people close to you, when you see that going on, what do you do?
Well, sometimes I just rave and rant and call people and vent and act like
okay.
a lunatic. I'm not going to lie.
That's a mechanism.
You know, sometimes I journal, I meditate, I'll go for a walk or do yoga. It, really, for me, I have to get centered and just go back to that place where I can get a clearer lens on the situation and ask my questions. I mean, as you know, I really love the Byron Katie work. I'll go back to that. You know, is this true? And the majority, so much as we can't know. We just can't know what's true. But, yeah, what about you? What do you do?
Well, what I did is I kept coming back to this is triggering a strong emotional response in me. So I know that there's a nugget that needs to be mined. And so I kept asking myself, what false core belief is there that this is touching on? Or it may not even be, well, it's a false core belief, and it's helping me get more in touch with it or have it a bubble up to the surface a little bit more. And I think, so what I discovered for myself is like, I'm like, what is it? There's something here. And I looked at my chart and I kept going, there's something here. And coming to the pattern, I think, for the need for external validation about what I'm doing is benefiting somebody or something. And then reminding myself that I need to unplug from the external validation and just trust, back to your point of what we had earlier in this conversation, but knowing that I'm a good person and my intention with this is of the highest, of wanting to make a contribution and wanting to create an environment where other young girls and young developing women have an opportunity to find their voices is what my overall intention is, and I never will know the impact, and I have to be satisfied with not knowing the impact. I may or may not know the impact, and you know that I've done a lot of volunteer work. I've done a lot of things in those situations, and yet sometimes they come back to you and tell you it was impactful, and other times you never know, and that has to be sufficient.
Mm-hmm. That's right. I think that's right. You just have to trust that whatever you're doing along your path, yeah, if your goal is to have a positive impact, that you're just being guided and trust that it lands as it will for the lessons of other people too, right? Because we all have a role. We're all playing our role. And we can't know what that means for other people always. We don't even always know what it means for ourselves.
Exactly. I was reading something recently related to astrology, and it basically, the take-home message for me was that we're all playing in an orchestra. Each one of us has our piece of music, and we have to show up and fully engage with our piece of music so mm-hmm. that the whole concert comes together. And with that, I'm going to wind down, and we'll be back in another month with another episode of Thelma and Louise. Thanks for listening.
Right. Bye.
Ciao.